Hi, my name is Sarah Flower, and you are listening to KSUT. Joined here today for our weekly update on COVID-19 is Leanne Jalan, Executive Director of San Juan Basin Public Health Department. Hi, Leanne.
Hey, Sarah.
So this week, school starts up at Fort Lewis College. Regionally, a lot more people have been in the area this past week getting orientation for schools and back to school shopping around the area as well. I believe Ignacio is starting up, Bayfield starting up, Durango will be next week. This time that we have been talking about for the last several weeks, it's happening. It's here. How are you holding up?
Yeah, it is. It is happening. And, you know, I think the thing that's interesting is you started this by saying there's more people in town because we, you know, are doing orientation at the college. And we know that Fort Lewis draws from all over the country. But, you know, the reality is with a kind of robust tourism economy, what's unclear to us in public health is if this influx is going to be different than the influx of tourists that we had, you know, June, July, and, you know, throughout the summer. So we'll be watching the numbers carefully. And we feel like we have, you know, I think if you lived in a community that didn't have a large tourism draw and you were bringing back a bunch of college students, you would really be very nervous about how this is going to work out. We feel like we kind of went through the drill this summer with high rates of tourism and really saw some increased cases. We have, you know, put in kind of infrastructure and put things in place to contain the cases that popped up over the summer. And we're hoping to apply what we learned this summer to the opening of schools, because we do expect, I mean, if you move people around and we move people together, we will see cases, you know, and that's how this is going to go. Fort Lewis has done a tremendous amount of planning and working through, but there's also still a lot to learn.
And last week they had reported that their private lab that they've been working with did 1,700 tests. Last week it was a requirement of students moving into the dorms to take a test. As of Friday, they were reporting 4 positives and 3 inconclusive, all of which were being isolated up on campus. And of course, we don't know information publicly about who these people were, but let's give a for instance that these are students that maybe reside, maybe they're coming from Arizona, wherever. But how does that work with San Juan Basin's dashboard as these positive tests are coming in? And how do we filter those through if they're living on campus but reside somewhere else?
Well, yeah, and I think that maybe just kind of saying that we had some infrastructure in place by going through a tourism season and having some lessons learned. We had started at some point this summer reporting our jurisdiction's cases, but also adding in non-resident cases in our dashboard. And that's not something you see in a lot of places, but we felt like for people to really understand what was going on in the community, seeing the non-resident numbers was important. So as students are moving in on move-in day, they were getting tested before they went to their dorm. So they gave the address of where they were coming from. And that was good because that way, if they went and moved into their dorm, we would need to do a case investigation of where they came from, how they traveled, right? Because your infectious period goes backwards. So with that, the app Fort Lewis College is using with their private lab to do their testing, records the address as their address of origin. So they show up in our database as non-resident cases that we are investigating, as well as the jurisdiction where that test result is going. So Fort Lewis's app has a legal requirement to get that result back out to the community from which the person came, but we're also investigating the case here because they could have had exposures where they came from along the way getting here and now in our community. Now, what we know is Fort Lewis is going to continue to do this type of testing throughout the semester. So once the students have moved in, they'll change their address in that app and they will be La Plata County residents, because at that point, we don't need to do a case investigation in the jurisdiction from where they came. So then they'll show up in the app as La Plata County residents. So again, you know, talking about just having some odd infrastructure in place, we made this choice, you know, at some point this summer to track non-resident and resident cases, and it's proving to be useful for looking at students moving in. So they, if they are coming from another location, are in our numbers right now as non-residents. But if some of the positives at Fort Lewis are off-campus students that lived here all summer, if they're faculty, if they're staff, and their permanent address is La Plata County, then they show up in our database as La Plata County residents.
But I mean, so much that you guys are on top of it and able to differentiate between the two, and as time comes by, then they will be counted in your tracker as La Plata County residents.
And the driver for us is to make sure the information gets to the right places so that a case is thoroughly investigated, right? If someone shows up here, tests positive, and then moves into a dorm, we have to go backwards and work, you know, through wherever they were. So we just kind of, by working with a lot of tourists this summer, built a really robust system for communicating with lots of surrounding communities and lots of other states.
Leanne, these four positive tests that came in last week, the college is reporting that they're all asymptomatic, which means they aren't showing symptoms of COVID-19. Does this put a bigger case in for the need of community-wide, like large testing? I know that San Juan Basin has made a priority for those with symptoms to come in and get tested because of limited testing, but does this make a case that we all need to be in?
It certainly does. And so first of all, I think we have to clarify, when someone tests positive and they're asymptomatic, sometimes we find that they are truly asymptomatic. Sometimes we find that they have mild symptoms, and upon like a further interview, it's, you know, when we do the case investigation, our case investigators will find out, well, no, actually they were experiencing some mild symptoms that they didn't attribute to COVID, because COVID does present in lots of different ways. And so sometimes someone does report mild symptoms during the case investigation. But the other thing that can happen is someone can test positive and then about 2 days later start to experience and demonstrate symptoms, right? So when we say asymptomatic, it could also mean that they're mildly symptomatic. It could also mean that they're not displaying symptoms yet, and that will happen over the next couple of days. So there's wide categories of individuals that can test positive without outwardly appearing sick, right? So yes, the answer to your question is absolutely. We do need more testing. We need faster testing. And there's this kind of debate going on, you know, in Colorado and nationwide about how do we get into every community in the country rapid testing that can let people know that they're positive before they display symptoms, so that we can then watch them closely, work through isolation, and figure out how to prevent it before they know that they're able to spread it. There are significant barriers currently in getting out this type of rapid testing. Some of it has to do with product availability. There are a few things that have been authorized by the FDA to be used in these circumstances, but they're not widely available because they're just backed up getting those types of tests out. But then there's other new technologies in this type of testing, and there's a variety. There's probably half a dozen things in the works, but they haven't been approved and gone into production at the rate that we need to do exactly what you are describing. So what we're left with is this diagnostic testing, which has to go off to a lab, get processed, wait for a result, very different than the rapid screening. You know, and so we're kind of in this waiting game as a public health community saying, well, if are we going to speed up the diagnostic tests so that they become useful? Or are we going to make this other type of rapid testing where you get the result right there, more available through these new technologies? And everyone is kind of in this scanning the horizon, figuring out which type of test is going to get authorized next, and then trying to scale up for their state or for multi-states, or these multi-state consortia that are trying to go in and buy this kind of testing together. And it's a little bit of a, how do you describe it? It's that hurry up and wait game until the answers are more clear.
And do you feel like the testing since March has become more accurate and these false negatives are less of a thing, or is it still on the same page?
So with the diagnostic testing, you know, there was some talk earlier in this that we think that there was a 30% rate of false negatives in diagnostic testing. A lot of that has to do with how the sample is collected. It maybe has to do with what point of infection a person is, right? And so there's still a lot to learn about a new virus and about how good the testing is and how accurate, right? So with some of these rapid tests, what we are expecting is that they will be lower sensitivity, right? And so they won't be as accurate as the PCR testing, but that's okay because the job is to get out as much testing as possible to as many people as inexpensively as we can so that we can constantly do asymptomatic screenings of the really important things that we need. We need critical businesses. We need first responders. We need healthcare workers. We need kids in school. We need teachers to be healthy and safe, right? We need universities to be up and running. So the idea is to make lower sensitivity testing available cheaply to everyone everywhere, while the diagnostic testing runs in the background to control outbreaks and do other things where you need a diagnostic test, right? So we can maybe unpack this at a future show because it is really complex. And the idea is, do you rely on the diagnostic testing that you cannot build fast enough? Or do you switch horses and go with this really broad-based, less expensive, albeit less sensitive, but widely available testing? And if you're doing 10 times or 100 times the number of tests, does it make up for the fact that it's less sensitive?
Leanne Gillon, Executive Director of San Juan Basin Public Health Department. Do you have anything else you'd like to add for us here today?
We're going into 6 months of responding to this pandemic and getting schools open, K-12 and higher ed, when we all know that these things were shut down pretty quickly earlier in the pandemic and moved to online, and kind of heroic efforts went into getting things done online, but it wasn't perfect because the timeline, was really impossible. Puts us in a whole new phase now, 6 months later, where we're starting to add new things in and kind of learn how that's going to affect the big picture.
Leanne Gillon, thanks so much for our COVID-19 update here on KSUT.